Hello, everyone. Welcome to the sounds of the 80s.
Sounds of the 90s. Took too long to get to that part. You don't know this song?
White Zombie? Justin Bieber? White Zombie?
Yeah. You have that great guitar thing at the beginning. Right? There it is.
Here we go. Okay, hey everyone, welcome to the show. Good fade out there. Welcome to LE2B, Last Exit of Brooklyn. I'm Tom McCaffrey.
Eric B.
How are you guys? We have a guest coming on in a little bit, but before she gets here, we are going to talk about what's going on in pop culture news and whatever.
Yeah, by the way, that song, you don't know that song?
Well, it sounded familiar once it started getting into the song, but yeah.
They use that in like every action movie of the 90s.
Yeah, White Zombie. Is that Rob Zombie or no?
Yeah, it's Rob Zombie.
It is, okay.
Yeah.
So he now he's like a movie director, or he was, I don't know.
Yeah, he directs like horror movies and stuff. His movies are like really like freaky. I think they're ones I remember are good, but I don't remember.
I only saw two of them. One of them was like kind of, you know, he's really into those like, you know, violent like grindhouse movies, you know, like of the 70s. I saw one called The Devil's Rejects.
Oh, right. That's one of them. Yeah.
That was probably one of the best ones I'd heard. I remember I was dating a girl and we went to go see it. Somehow she like agreed to see it. I mean, it's like not a good date movie, but I mean, I've been dating her for a while.
Oh, okay. But probably still not a good first date movie.
Yeah, it wasn't our first date, but I'd warned her what it was about, and then but it got good reviews, and I think it was fine.
She liked it.
Did she like it? I think she thought it was okay.
All right.
It was like, you know, we were getting along at that point, so you know when it's pretty early, and you kind of just put up with whatever the person, you know, you're like, oh yeah, no, that's fine, and then later you're like, I hate you. Yeah, that happens at first. And then I remember it might have been the same girl. Like later on, we saw another movie and we got into a fight about the plot or something. Just, you know, like when you're like, when it's a relationship's not going well, you just start getting into fights about like nothing, you know?
Pretty much every relationship.
Well, it was like, I remember what it was. So you tell me, so like she had read the book, like she was like, oh my God, we have to see this movie. This movie is based on a book. She's like, it's my favorite book. I love it. I've read it so many times. And then I was like, so is that how the book ends? And she was like, I don't remember. I go, you don't remember how the book ends? She's like, yeah, I don't remember. I'm like, you said it was your favorite book and you've read it like 20 times. And she was like, yeah, I just don't remember. And I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And then, you know, it's just like a huge fight. But isn't that a little weird?
That's very weird. Yeah, I would say so. But, you know. Anyway, I want to actually just bring up something real fast because we had a famous death. The guy was 86, Charles Grodin.
You know, it's just funny because I don't know who I was talking about, but you know, restaurant terms, you know, they're talking about a restaurant term, you know, when something's gone or they're out of it, they say, oh, 86 of that.
Mm-hmm.
And someone said it was because the average age I said, oh, maybe it's because the average age of people dying is 86. So it's like, oh, 86 of that. And then I saw, that was like 4 days ago. And then I saw he died at 86.
Wow. Yeah. That's always.
Yeah. So,
yeah. I'm surprised I didn't read about him in Wikipedia the other day. Cause that's usually I do that. And then like three days later, they die. I'm like, oh, that guy's still alive. And then 3 days later, they die.
Yeah, yeah. So
you want to hear a clip? You ever see Midnight Run? Because people love that movie.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen that a lot of times. I mean, probably like five times. I worked at a movie theater like in the Hamptons the summer that came out. So I kept seeing like parts of it over and over, not the whole thing. I mean, and then I finally saw the whole thing.
It's one of those movies. It's like kind of become a cult classic. I'll play a clip. Right. Real. It's De Niro and Charles Grodin.
It's very underrated.
Oh, now they're just looking
it's
at each other.
It's a silent film, you guys.
Familiar with the word arteriosclerosis? Cholesterol? You want to outline a complete balanced diet for you.
Yeah, that was Charles Grodin laying into Robert De Niro for eating crappy.
Yeah, and he, De Niro doesn't have a lot of lines in that scene. a lot of people are in it. Yaphet Kotto, John Ashton.
Yaphet Kotto has, I think he just died too.
Yeah. Joe Pantoliano is in it. It's a good movie. It's like he's a bounty hunter, Robert De Niro, and he has to take Charles Grodin. He's bringing him back like across the country, I think, to like get money for him, like $100,000. He like stole from like a big mobster in Chicago or something. Is that what it is? Charles Grodin's right. character.
It's more just like the interplay with those two. You know, De Niro just like he's like the neurotic nebbishy guy, and De Niro's just De Niro because he always plays the same character basically.
Yeah, it's good. Martin Brest directed it. Do you know that? He directed Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I'm just looking. Also, Grodin, he was in Rosemary's Baby. I forgot about that. He was in Catch 22.
Who was he in Catch 22?
I don't know. That movie has like a lot of actors in it, like a lot of famous people. So I think everyone basically had a small role. Heartbreak Kid, he was in the original of that.
That was one of his big ones.
Yeah, I know he was in like Heaven Can Wait. I don't know if you ever saw that movie.
I never saw it, but that's the Warren Beatty one.
Yeah, that's the one that Chris Rock remade years later.
Yeah, that looked awful. And then what he was in, Beethoven, those were kind of his later movie. He was in all those Beethoven movies. That was when it was kind of over.
He had this like kind of comeback in the 90s where he had his own talk show. And, you know, he's kind of a funny, dry guy. This is what I wanted to, Dana Carvey would do a funny impression of him. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think I remember that.
Yeah.
True, and I think people forget that if you're a poor person, it doesn't mean it doesn't mean you're a lazy person. And
basically, I think Charles Grodin would just stop and stare for a while. Yeah. And that
these
was
are
like
a lot of visual clips you're playing. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. Do you have any clips from Charlie Chaplin's The Tramp?
Well, I noticed when it was going on, I'm like, I should set him up.
No, I know. It's hard to. Yeah, it's enough. So he was known for this. Like, he always would go on Letterman and he would kind of like give Letterman a hard time. Do you remember that?
Yeah, because he was just had that personality where he was just like, whatever you said, he would just come back with some snarky look or comment, you know?
And he would go ahead.
No, he's funny, though.
He would shit on Letterman a lot. Like Letterman would kind of take it. It was kind of the only times I'd seen that where someone was crapping on Letterman. Like I guess it was kind of the first time I saw it, I didn't understand it because I guess it was like a bit they did. But
yeah,
he would always kind of be like, "Oh, you're such a jerk." Like he seemed serious, you know. And I don't know, Letterman, I guess, thought it was funny or something. I don't know, maybe Letterman needed a break.
Yeah, I think Letterman sometimes like people wouldn't fuck with him, you know. So I do know that his daughter is a comic. Charles Grodin.
Oh, yeah. What's
Marianne Grodin.
Do you know her?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen her in a while. She performs a lot, I think, still. She kind of is like a killer up there. Like,
really?
She kills, yeah.
Has she been a comic for a while?
Yeah, a long time. But, you know, I just...
What's her name?
Marianne Grodin.
Yeah, maybe I've seen her. All right, so this is a good... Well, go ahead.
No, it's just like, it's a kind of a different type of... I mean, she still has that kind of acerbic kind of humor from what I remember, but it's like more high octane, you know, as he was like low key, I think.
Yeah, he was also in a movie with Chevy Chase and Goldie Hawn, Seems Like Old Times. That was
all right. Those. Yeah.
That's what I remember him from. And then this is a weird thing to say, but like later on, like his hair always kind of looked weird. So like, I think he was wearing like a weird toupee later on.
I think he was wearing like plugs or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Did you ever notice that his hair kind of looked weird?
Yeah, I know. I mean, the thing is that in Hollywood, it only seems like 5% of the actors get bald, but in real life, 60 or 70% of men get bald. So yeah, they use stuff, you know. So
and his was like, I guess his was before they had really good, like, you know, solutions because it looked not that good. And then, he was one of those guys. It was just kind of like, I feel like he was kind of before our time, like right before us.
Yeah, I think he was one of those guys who came very close to being like an A-list star. He probably maybe could be considered at one point, but I think he was always like the second guy in every movie.
Yeah, you know? Well, like when we were watching movies, like yeah. In Beethoven, I think he's the star, but I mean, I think second to Bait to Dog.
No, he is Beethoven, actually.
Yeah, they made like three of those. He probably like made a lot of money, so.
Yeah, it's like, you know, those, you know, later, Eugene Levy was in like every American Pie movie.
Like, he's actually maintained a pretty good career.
He's like huge. He came back with that show.
That show, yeah, that show's huge.
But he said
his son's huge.
Yeah, but he said he made all his money on those movies. And they were funny because like by the fifth American Pie, the son wasn't even in it. They had to just find ways for him to enter scenes. It was really funny. Like,
oh, I see. Like
Jason Eugene Biggs Levy, wasn't in. Yeah. He's like, hey, how's it going? I'm like, didn't your kid graduate 10 years ago? Why are you here?
Yeah, he's like, oh, I need to tell you some more advice about sex. And I was like, he's like 40. Yeah, his career is better than Jay's and all those kids in American Pie's careers. Yeah. You know? They were supposed to be like the hot next, you know, wave of stars, those American Pie kids.
And no, I just saw the Mina Suvari in something recently. She played a mom, and I didn't recognize her at first. Remember, she was in American Pie and American Beauty.
Yeah, she was in American Beauty.
Yeah.
She had her run. A lot of those guys, they were like kind of done fast.
Yeah. Chris Klein kind of finished his career with that audition thing.
I think everyone, he had a rep of like everyone hating him. I don't know if I ever told you this story, but I was at a show once, and it was this cool downtown show where like celebs were always there, and Olivia Wilde was there.
Oh,
and
wow.
Like she was doing this thing where she was reading like an interview that he had given with like some magazine, and she was reading it and basically commenting on what a dick he was the whole time. Like,
oh, that's hilarious. And she's like a big director now too.
Yeah. And it was like when she was, you know, she was pretty big at the time, and there were like a couple other celebs there, and it was like a bit she did. I guess she had it was basically he was talking about how like how to treat women and all, and like what a study was. And
you remember that audition though, right?
Yeah, where he's like singing.
I think it was some of that. He auditioned for something and someone saved the tape, and he's like he just sounds like he's fucking out of his mind a little bit.
I think it's just he's really bad. It's like, and then he parodied it on Funny or Die.
Funny, I remember that, yeah.
I think it's like Mamma Mia or something. Let me see if I can find it. Here. I think this might be.
You want to play it?
You guys have Mandy Moore in here. She is an angel of all angels. I don't know if you guys saw American Dreams that her and I did together. Best a dream come true. You should hire her on the spot.
All right, here it goes.
All right, here we go. I wasn't jealous before we met. Now every man that I see is a potential threat. And I'm possessive, it isn't nice. You heard me saying that smoking was my only vice.
Okay, wait a minute. Like I got a really bad singer.
But was that the parody or the real thing?
No, that's not the parody.
Oh my God. Good
that's
Lord.
The real thing.
Wow.
So yeah, I guess that really hurt him. And I don't know. Like if you piss everyone off, then they all get mad and they don't want you around, right?
Yeah, you know. And he wasn't like, I guess, so standout. He wasn't a standout talent as much that he could overcome that. He wasn't a Shia LaBeouf,
right? Which is like scary to say, but like I don't know. When you really break it down, like why did those kids think that like they were going to have these long careers because they're in this. I mean, that movie was just like just about a guy fucking a pie. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like for some reason, it was at a time where those movies were like heralded or something. You know what I mean?
Are you clicking a pen?
I am. Yeah. Sorry. Oh. Okay. So can we talk about this real quick? Yeah. We talked about it last week.
Your guest is in the room, but we'll let her in a minute.
Yeah, can you just give us like a couple minutes?
Yeah,
we'll let her in. And basically, his name was Peng Dang, is the Asian comedian. He's from Dallas, and I didn't realize this until because you told me this on the air, like while we were doing it. So Tony Hinchcliffe like said that racist stuff about him, and Panged. I was in Dallas for like, you know, about a year ago, for like 4 months when the quarantine started.
Yeah.
And I saw him a few times in Dallas.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, some shows. And he was like, I guess he's from China and he has a pretty thick accent, but he seemed to be like kind of like a presence on the scene there. I think he had been there a while, but people like seemed to really like him and he seemed kind of like.
Did you? Because I watched some clips of him and I talked to a comic about it. Who knows Tony Hinchcliffe well, and you know, and he said that he thought maybe was this guy shitting on white people or shitting on whatever, but I didn't see that from that guy. It didn't seem like he was that type of a comic.
I don't remember anything like that. I think he does jokes about being Chinese, and I guess he got mad at that. Maybe he thought it was hacky or something. But I mean, yeah. That's not like what.
Well, was he canceled? I guess he wasn't canceled. Everyone forgot
Tony Hinchcliffe?
Yeah.
No, I think they dropped him from like, they canceled him about as much as you can cancel anyone now. Like, his agent dropped him. And
oh, his agent did drop him.
Yeah. But this is a good segue because we're about to, we have a guest. So do you want to let her in and then yes. I'll introduce her?
Yeah, I got to look that up about him being canceled. I'll find that. I'll look at that up in a minute.
Yeah, we can talk about. I mean, this is a little bit. Hello.
Yeah.
Hi.
So I'm gonna give you an intro real quick, and then we'll start talking. So we have a guest. I've known her. We went to college together, SMU. All right, back in Dallas.
Nice.
And she has a book out. It's called "The Situation: A Radical Journey Through Sisterhood." And we're going to talk to her about it. And she's been in a bunch of other stuff. Everyone, please give it up for Lila Glasso-Francis. Oh. Yeah.
That's great.
How are you? This is Eric, by the way. I don't think you guys haven't met.
Hey, Eric. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
So how are you? What's going on?
I'm good. You know, I'm here in Ojai, California. Super hot out today, super sunny, you know, living the California dream time.
Yeah, that's a that's a super rich area, right?
Well, it's by Santa Barbara, so yeah, okay. it's not cheap.
Yeah, isn't that the slogan for Ojai? It's not cheap.
I thought everyone, according to Joe Rogan, everyone left California, the entire state. Is that not true?
There's been a lot of people that left. And I would say the really weird thing is my town used to have like older people, but there's really rich 30 to 40 year olds that moved here. But I don't know where from.
Wow. No, I was making a joke about it because I don't think people are leaving California. I mean, they might have a little bit, but they'll come back.
You can't even, I live in a town of 8,000 people and you can't even drive downtown barely on the weekend. It's so busy.
Really?
Yeah, it's packed. We're packed with tourists already.
And me and Lila went to college together, so I was just in Dallas like about a year ago for the quarantine. Have you been back? SMU is where we went. It's in Dallas, Texas. Have you been back since we graduated?
Tom, I have not been back once. I'm a horrible SMU alumni.
Well, I'm a horrible SMU alumni and I've been back like a lot of times.
Okay.
Cause my sister lives right down the street from SMU. So I always go back there and it's super weird cause it kind of looks the same. Go ahead.
But we're going to your old college and seeing everything seems smaller, that kind of thing, right?
It kind of did, but, you know, it's funny. So the last time I was there, like a year ago, I actually was able to get into our dorm. Remember our dorm, freshman?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Bose Hall.
Yeah. Bose Hall. Wow. I got in somehow and I got into my room. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, my God. Campus security. Like, what up? Yeah,
that was one thing about it. It had very light campus security, which is weird because it was very like expensive, that school.
It's true.
And it's gotten worse. I've heard like... Because you remember this, there were a lot of like rich kids that went there, right?
Right, right. Yeah.
You know who went there after us is one of the Kardashians went there.
Oh, stop. Wow. Really?
Yeah. Khloe Kardashian went there. Or no, Kourtney Kardashian.
Oh, not the good one, though.
Wait, is Kim
who's
the good?
Who's the good one?
They're all bad. I'm just joking.
Yeah, the smart one went. That actually probably doesn't say a lot for our school that one of the Kardashians went there.
Well, you know, the Desperate Housewives. Sorry, the Housewives of Dallas. I shouldn't call them the Desperate Housewives. Ooh, what's up, Freud? But they, a bunch of them went to SMU, and some of them, when you look at their bios, say they went there in 2001. But I recognize them from class in the early 90s. So I'm just saying.
Wow.
Oh, do you really?
Breaking news. It's true.
And so when we were there, so we were like studying theater. And there's some people we went there with. They're like pretty successful now, right?
Lauren Graham, right?
Oh.
Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did Lauren you know Graham her? She was there. She was a grad student when we were there.
She was a grad student when we were there. Yeah, I was friends with Lauren. And
didn't you like run into her or something? And you said she was like not that nice or something. Is that a story that
it was perfectly lovely, Tom?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Cool. That's she does listen to this. And
it
then
the, it was the other Gilmore girl. She's not nice.
Yeah,
she was really shitty. And do you remember this? All right, I'm just going to go through this stuff real quick because it's all coming back to me. Do you remember there was a rumor that Brendan Fraser was supposed to go to our school? Do you remember this?
He was. And then he got, I think, Encino Man, right?
Yeah, that's what happened.
Wow. Was it Encino Man or school? It was School Ties, I think.
No, I think it was
a great movie.
No, it was before it was Encino Man. Because this is what happened. I heard that someone was like, this was the first rumor I heard. So Aaron Spelling went to SMU. Did you know that?
Yes, and he was a male cheerleader. Just an interesting fact.
Yeah, he's from Highland Park, which is the neighborhood right there where my mom was from. So my mom was kind of like aware of him. And I think he was a cheerleader in high school. And so there was a rumor that Tori Spelling, 90210 had just blown up, and everyone was like, Tori Spelling's going to come to school here. And she didn't end up going to school there. And I was always like, oh, that sounds made up. And then a year later, people were like, Brendan Fraser was supposed to come here, but then he did. And Encino Man had just come out, and they were like, but he got Encino Man, so he didn't come. I was like, "That there's no way that's real.
And I think also Ethan Hawke was supposed to come there.
Yeah.
So
would every famous 90s person go to your school or almost go to your school?
Basically.
I think the cast of Melrose Place
almost go to your school.
What? Who?
Did Christian Slater almost go to your school?
No, but
he didn't go to college, I don't think.
Yeah, I think he dropped out in like fourth grade. But NSYNC at one point was going to come as an entire band. No, but this is the funny part of the end of the story is so then later, like I read an interview with Brendan Fraser and he said, oh, I was supposed to go to SMU. He name checked it, but then I got this movie and so I didn't do it.
So like urban legend was true, right?
Yeah, it was one of those.
It was an urban legend. Yeah.
Did you think it was an urban legend or did you believe it?
I just thought it was I thought it was a total lie.
No, it's totally real. It's actually like a real thing. And then and another I always talk about that went there when we were there. You might have known him better than I did. Was Brian Baumgartner was there from Office?
I knew Brian really well because I dated his roommate.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who was his roommate?
Michael Mayer.
Oh, really? I remember that. Yeah.
I went out with him for a little bit and Brian was his roommate. So I used to go hang out with those guys. Brian's hilarious. Brian lives in LA.
Did you ever because you were in LA for a while, right?
I was in LA. He went to Minneapolis with a bunch of people and then relocated to LA kind of as I was leaving. But I know he still stays in touch with all the SMU people that are still in LA, which is, it's really only like an hour away, but I just don't go down there much.
Yeah,
you know, and he's killing it on a Cameo. Have you heard about that?
No.
You're talking about Brian Baumgartner?
Yeah.
So, you know Cameo, where people pay for celebrities for messages. He makes the most money out of everybody.
Wow.
Because
people love The Office, and I think he might do it in his voice from The Office. You know, I think it's, but I heard he made like over $1 million doing that.
Wow.
That's insane.
Yeah.
that's like a thing. Cause I mean, he was really funny and he was like a good actor, but I wasn't like, oh, one day that guy's just going to say his name for millions of dollars.
He was actually like a really good serious actor, which is so funny because now he's just like sort of in that genre of comedy, right?
All right.
Yeah, he was like a good serious actor and he was like, he was good. He was like a very, I remember people would always be like, oh man, he's so great. And I was like, he's all right. I think I was just like, I was totally like just hating on him. I mean, like, I thought he was good, but it was like one of those things. It's like, all right, he's good, but do I have to talk about it all the time? You know what I mean? So Lila, so you went to LA right after college.
I did. I went, I went home for 2 months in Minnesota where I'm from, and then sort of got my stuff together. And I moved out with my college roommate, Lori Klein. Now, Lori Tweedley, who's married to a comic, by the way.
Right, right. What's his name?
Sean Tweedley.
Do you know him, Eric?
LA guy.
He's originally from Canada, and he was really...
He tours with Harlan Williams a lot.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I mean, he's probably big. Some of those LA guys, I just don't know, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
In LA, he's actually considered a Toronto guy because he's buddies with like Pat Bullard and that crowd.
Right,
like,
okay.
Sort of the Toronto comics that moved to LA hang out together.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That actually happens in New York too. A lot of the Canadian comics hang out together.
So when you went there to LA, because I remember like we were all graduating, we were all like kind of wanted to get into the business. What was that like? Because it was very... Did you move out there? I know you went out there with Lori, but were there a lot of people that were out there when you were there?
Some people came later, like the class after us, who have all done great, especially like they're all huge writers now, you know, David Schulner and Aaron Ginsberg. And
yeah, they're all like these huge, and a guy in our class, David Slack, is like a huge writer.
And Allison Moore, huge writer.
Oh, wow.
And then Kari Payton, actor, he came out later than I was there. It was a really weird time when I first came to LA because I was there like during the Harvey Weinstein years, right? So, So, and I actually worked for a producer at Miramax next door to Harvey's office.
Carrie Woods,
yeah.
Do you have any good story about him? Because this would really help our...
For Harvey Weinstein. I have one Harvey story. I do. I actually do.
Really? Okay.
It's not a huge one. I think that, you know, I was really lucky because I think like Carrie, my boss, basically said like, don't mess with any of my girls in the office or whatever. And I was like his personal assistant in between auditions. So one time my boss made Beautiful Girls, the movie, and they premiered it at St. Patrick's Day, and they had a big reception at Tom Bergen's bar, which is like an Irish pub in LA that's pretty famous. And I was standing in line for a drink behind Chaz Palminteri, who I love. Like,
yeah,
he's great. You know, plays every Italian like bad guy, right? But he was so cute.
Bronx Tale. Young.
And he's really tall and I'm short. I'm like 5'3". So his butt was like here in the bar. And Harvey Weinstein came up behind me to get a drink. And he actually pushed into me like, and I could feel his, you know, special salute on the,
really?
The back of my buttocks. He was not a tall man. And he pushed me. So like, I think the visual, I wish someone had gotten a picture. My face is in Chaz Palminteri's ass.
Yeah.
And Harvey Weinstein's trying to poke me from behind just to get a drink. So how tough it was to get a drink in those years in Hollywood.
Yeah, that sounds about right from the stories I've heard.
Yeah.
Those Weinstein stories end up with some girl's face in Chaz Palminteri's ass.
I'm going to say it right now.
So that's the only interaction I had.
I'm going to say it right now. I feel like Harvey Weinstein is kind of a creepy dude. I don't know what where you guys stand on that, but I'm going to say it. So
I'm still on the fence. I'm going to wait to hear how the public comes out on that one.
Wow. That's really a new thought.
Yeah, I know. I don't like to take sides too quickly.
Yeah.
Before I hear all
I'm anti Harvey Weinstein. I'll say it. I don't care.
I want to hear both sides of the stories.
Yeah.
It was a
crazy time because that kind of stuff was just rampant.
Did that happen? So, did that happen a lot, especially because you were like young and just new out there and there was a lot?
Oh my God. So I wrote a script that I actually sold to Nickelodeon. But before I sold it to Nickelodeon, I pitched it at Fox. sucks. And I got to like the top guy and I was so excited and I gave him my pitch. And his only reaction was, so do you always dress like this?
Wow.
Oh.
Wow.
And it was like, really?
What were you wearing?
I was wearing a James Pierce V-neck t-shirt. Like, you know, it wasn't, I wasn't dressed like I'm ready for Vegas.
Right. Were you like, yeah, no, I always wear pants.
I think I did say something like that. I was like, yeah, I always wear like shirts. Yeah.
But you ended up selling it to that guy or to them or someone
else? No, I sold it to a different studio. I sold it to Nickelodeon. Got paid for it to be in development for 3 years, was able to buy the option back. And then I sold it to Oxygen, got paid for that to be in development and it never got produced.
Yeah, that sounds like, you know,
hey, you can make a lot of money with stuff and just being in development. So at that point you could.
And you, so I do remember, the reason I remember you worked for Kerry Woods was because I like soon after worked at his production company for like a little while.
At Independent Pictures?
Yeah. Was that before you worked at him when he when he was at Miramax, right?
Right. Yeah.
And wasn't there a thing where I remember like someone from our school, I don't know if this is true or not, like he had gotten you like some, like a, you were going to be in one of his movies at one point, or am I wrong on that? Okay, I have no memory of that. Okay. I just thought someone had told me that because you worked for him for years, right?
I did. I was lucky to be in stuff, but I was in a movie with Tisha Campbell. And when I was working for him, but I don't think he got, maybe he got,
was it, was it, was he producing it or was it?
No.
Oh, okay. What was he, did you, I mean, you interacted with him a lot. Was he cool to you or was he kind of,
he was cool. I mean, he was a character, but he was a cool guy. I used to go to movie premieres with him and I got to see Scream sitting next to Skeet Ulrich and I was like, so scary. And Skeet Ulrich was like, you're sitting next to me. Like, yeah. I'm not scary. I'm like right here.
Yeah. Stop screaming. It's Scream. Yeah.
So it could have been
Johnny Depp though, that you were sitting next to. Didn't they look exactly alike?
They do. They look exactly alike, but it was Skeet. And you know, that was the cool thing. Like Jared Leto used to hang out at his house, Michael Rapaport.
Michael Rapaport used to come in when I worked at the office. I didn't really interact with Kerry Woods much, but the couple times I did, he was very not friendly to me. not that he should have been, but it's just, I just remember specifically.
He's doing comedy right now in New York City. He's jumping around.
No, clubs. I'm talking about not Michael Rapaport, Kerry Woods. I was like, Kerry Woods is doing comedy? Jeez.
No way. I heard Michael Rapaport's pretty good. I think that's amazing. I loved his tirade about getting people to wear a mask. Did you ever see it?
Yeah, he's like kind of good at those rants. That's kind of his thing. Yeah, those Trump
things were great. He kept calling him pig dick the whole time. That was so funny.
Someone like him thrived. You know, he started out in stand-up before he like hit it big. I remember when I lived in LA in like 2000, 2001. I knew these. Actually, my friend, you know him too, my friend Chell Bjorgen, who is a comedian. His managers managed Michael Rapaport when he was a stand-up. Funny. So he started getting successful and like got out of stand-up, and it's really funny. Like with stand-up, like people always go back to it when everything else like falls apart. You know what I mean? Like, right, Eric, isn't that kind of like the theme where like when everyone's career falls apart, they go back to stand-up or they start doing stand-up. So.
Yeah. I mean, some people do stand-up, get famous, and then their career doesn't pan out, but they'll always have stand up to fall back on. There are some people who never were in stand up and then they try it and they have a harder time with it.
But it's weird too, because it's almost like porn actors go into it when their porn careers end.
Really?
Yeah. So it's kind of like porn actors are like, well, porn didn't work out. So like now what?
Yeah.
Which is kind of like, oh, it's lower than porn.
But it never works out that well. Like, what was her name a few years ago? She was selling out comedy clubs, Stormy Daniels.
Yeah, Stormy Daniels was.
Yeah, everyone was interested in her because of the Trump connection. And I heard stories about, I mean, she never did comedy. She's doing an hour on stage. I mean,
did you ever do stand up, Lila? Like, I think actually I went to
it.
Yeah. And I think I was there one time.
I have to say, I was pretty good. I was pretty good.
Nice. All right.
You know, I mean, I think I had a unique twist for LA. I told stories about my, Scandinavian parents.
So let's fast forward a little because, so your book that came out last year, right?
Yeah.
It's called The Situation.
The Situation, A Radical Journey Through Sisterhood. I wrote it. I'm promoting it this month because it's Brain Cancer Awareness Month. And it's the story about my sister who I believe lived in New York City and got brain cancer from 9/11 from the aftermath cleanup. And
did she live right near Ground Zero?
Well, her gallery was in Chelsea. So really close. And she actually was on the Stairmaster at the gym on the Chelsea Pier watching people fall out of the building. And she said she thought they were filming a movie. Like she didn't realize what was going on. And, you know, your mind just is desensitized from movies. So you think like, oh, that's going on. So they said there was a huge rise in immunity cancers after 9/11 and almost like clockwork, like 13 years for first responders. And then like 11 years for first responders, 13 years later for people who lived or had businesses around the area. And that was because of the toxicity in the air for the whole year. And so I really believe that's how she got ill. But the book isn't like totally depressing, I want to say. It's like a flashback to our sisterhood for 45 years.
Growing. Was she younger or older?
She was my big sister. She was older, but just slightly older. So we were super close in age. I mean, I probably talked to her 9 times a day. So, it changed the trajectory of my life. But
when did she die?
She died 5 years ago.
Wow.
And she, I raise her son now.
Oh, that's sweet.
Wow.
And it's nice for me that he has a book of like funny memories between Carolyn and I growing up. So it's a great book to give people that want to explore like deep relationship or like your sister, send it to your sister. The coolest thing about it has been the feedback that I get from people I don't know who are like, oh my God, I read it and it helped me get through the fact that my mother died of cancer and no one talked about it because you didn't do that in that day and age. And reading your sister's story made me feel like I had closure, like cool stuff like that.
So was that, when did you write it?
It took me about 3 years to write it.
So what was that? I mean, how was that? That must have been hard.
It was.
Writing books seems so hard.
I kind of made a timeline and then I just started writing. And then I actually hired a really great editor named Jenny Davis, who basically took the first book I wrote and she rearranged all the chapters and then gave me notes on like, this is missing, this is missing, so that was I didn't realize I didn't fully describe my brother-in-law because I'm writing about someone I know. So it was great to have outside eyes read it.
Right, right.
That was my editor. And then I shopped it around and I met my publisher, who's an independent publisher, the Unapologetic Voice House. And she loved it. And I sort of loved her vision. And I love that. Actually, I was really seduced by the name of the publishing house, the Unapologetic Voice House, because I was like, this book is an unapologetic explanation of sisterhood. So,
right.
Yeah.
And is that do you have other siblings, right?
I have 5 foster brothers and sisters from Vietnam.
Jeez. I actually, I went to you and Dines' wedding and I was sitting next to one of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I remember that specifically.
Probably Quang, I'm guessing. I would have sat you next to Quang.
I don't remember. I remember I got, I don't want to say, so like after the, before the reception, which was after the ceremony, is that what they call it? The vows or whatever. I got high with someone. Was like, hey, someone just had a joint, and I was like, oh, all right. And then, I love how I'm making it. Like I was like forced into it. Like, oh, all right, but it was like random.
Get stoned with them at your wedding. Yeah.
I mean, but it wasn't like I bought weed. I brought weed with me,
you did buy some though.
Yeah. And so,
Were you selling weed at my wedding? I mean, that's honest.
That's kind of sounds like it.
That's basically the story. Yeah. I actually did a weed heist, during your wedding. No, so I got kind of high, and I remember I sat at the table, and I was next to him, and I remember I it was one of those times where you realize you're too high, you know, and it's bad. And I remember I overheard someone asking for someone to pass the bread at the table. This is like a total high story. And like they didn't hear them. And I was so high, all I could focus on was them asking for the bread and the person not hearing them. And I just started dying laughing at the table because I was high and like it didn't make any sense what I was laughing at. And it was one of those things where I was like, what's so funny? Like, because there was nothing funny going on. So,
no, I am so glad that you made your own personal fun at my wedding. I'm just really, that's awesome.
Well, it was just, it was a funny thing because I had to come up with, because I was laughing a lot and nothing was going on. And everyone was like, what's going on? And then I was like, yeah, just this guy told me this joke. And then they were like, well, what's the joke? And then I had to like, come up with something on the spot. But anyway, that's a totally different. That's a good tangent I went on. Yeah.
Were you like, why did the chicken cross the road? You had to think one fast.
I think I just left the table and, you know, cried or something.
And now it makes sense because in all the stories about, you know, that stone guy at your wedding, that's you.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah,
you've outed yourself.
I will say, though, that it wasn't my idea. It was like a friend of yours that I'd met a couple of times. You had this friend, I think she was a casting director. She was kind of like a tough, like, girl. I don't know if that's a good description. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, might have
been who. Yeah, you're like, yeah, maybe I'm making that up. I think
you
know, it was.
The sad thing is when you got married so long ago, like I did, I don't even really remember everyone who was there.
I know. I was going to say it was like 20 years ago. So
yeah, we just had our 20th. Crazy.
That is crazy. So I was reading in the description, like John Stewart, when he was talking to the 9/11 commission, was like one of the inspirations to you when you started writing it.
Yeah. Because I really wanted, you know, when my sister got diagnosed with glioblastoma brain cancer, nothing had been written about it longer than like an article. And a lot of people hadn't written about that. This was a major thing going on with New Yorkers, people that were there. And I just thought it's really important for me to share my story of what I think happened. So there is a chapter just on that day in New York City, because I was in New York that day with her. We were
when John Stewart was.
No, I was in New York when 9/11 hit the Twin Towers. In
fact, you were here?
I was there. I was visiting. I had to go to a wedding in Newport, Rhode Island. So we flew in, went to the wedding, and then came and stayed with my sister for a couple of days, and then got trapped in New York for a week.
Because I had just moved back here, like about a month earlier I'd driven across country.
Wow!
And your sister probably told you this, and you probably remember, Eric. Like,
I mean, I saw it. Yeah, I saw it too.
You did?
Mm-hmm. Midtown. I was Midtown.
It smelled for like 9 months.
You know, that's what I tell people about that experience. That's weird. Is I remember how like everyone was panicking about food. So like my sister would get calls from friends like, hey, there's this Mexican restaurant 2 blocks from you that has like tons of food. So we were like, okay, let's go grab dinner. Let's go get food. So first of all, Dines took a picture of like 60th and Columbus, like completely empty, like no traffic. It's like the coolest picture.
Yeah.
But I remember it was garbage night. And that night. And so everyone had pulled their garbage out to the curb. And I remember walking by it and thinking, and this is so gross, this smells so good. Like the garbage smelled sweet compared to the air. And that's how bad the air smelled that we were all breathing.
Yeah. Yeah. And they told us, I think they told everyone, oh, it's safe. You can come back in. And the city stunk of death. Like it was like, there's rumors.
It literally
that was
smelled
burning.
It was like burning, right? Yeah. And not even for like for months. Like it was.
I think
just...
it smelled like when your science partner burned his bangs in the Bunsen burner, you know, in like high school. So it's like human mixed with iron, like with steel. Oh,
yeah,
disgusting.
It was. And luckily, I wasn't that close to it, but I definitely. And then you were probably gone by this point. But then for like a while, there were just like people put up posters of people that they were like looking for. That was so insane. I haven't really thought about it in a while, but you know, like when it was happening, it was such a crazy,
I mean, for me, last year, like in April or May, that time right when Corona hit and everyone left the city and I was in the city, it had a very similar vibe to 9/11, like the weeks after.
Right, because like no one was here, right?
No one was here. Everyone was just kind of walking around in a daze. It was, everything was kind of scary. You were like, you kept thinking in both instances, like, is this it? This is my, this could be it for New York. Could be, you know?
Yeah, there was a lot of that after 9/11, right?
Yeah.
That was another thing. It was like, no one's going to want to live here anymore.
And well, then, not only that, but I remember after that, like people thought we were going to get hit again. And there were like alarms going off a lot. Fire alarms. And anytime a fire alarm went off, everyone was freaking out because they figured we were getting hit again or something like that.
Right, right. Yeah. So it was
good times.
New York's a tough. Yeah, yeah. Good times. Yeah. New York's a rough city. You never lived here, right? But you come here a lot, right?
I didn't live there, but I'll tell you, my daughter, I have a 17-year-old daughter who's applying to colleges now, and she is applying to Barnard and Columbia. And
wow,
because
really?
She really wants to be in New York City. She loves New York City. I think, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side. I grew up in Minneapolis, which is a big city. And I love living in my tiny town now. But
really?
She grew up in a tiny town. So she's like, bring on New York City. Yeah.
Yeah. It's we grew up here and it was I think I was talking to you about this before that people are like, people ask if I like New York City a lot, and I'm always like, yeah, it's all right. And then people are like, well, you know, what about like, you should move here? And I'm like, yeah, but I've moved places. And what it is like, I move places and I'm like, oh, cool, I'm out of New York City. But then I'm like, oh, this place really sucks. So it's basically like,
there's nothing to do.
Well, I think I said to someone once, they were like, so you don't like New York City, you don't like anywhere else. I was like, I think I just don't like Earth. I think I'm just not liking Earth. That seems to be the problem.
You should get on Jeff Bezos's rocket ship.
I guarantee you I would get, where is it going to Mars?
I think so.
I'd guarantee you I'd get there and I'd be like, yeah, New York's better than this.
Than Mars.
Like, I'd be like, well, I mean, I think what is like, it ruined everywhere else. Like, New York is really annoying to me, but like, I like it better than other places. You know what I mean? Like, I really, did you like LA when you were living there? Like, cause you were there for a long time.
I was in LA for 17 years. And I, you know, I want to say that I had like a love hate with it. Like, parts of it fascinated me. Like, the plastic surgery thing, I had never seen anything like that in my life. Like,
right.
Coming from Minnesota, there, you know, there is a whole new level of plastic surgery to just people watch for
right,
out there.
Right.
And it was also super strange that, I mean, I guess it must be like DC. Like, I'm sure in DC, everyone talks about politics. In LA, everyone talks about movies. Everybody, you know, any date that I had was with a guy who worked somehow in the movies or TV. It was like nothing else existed in the world but entertainment. So it was, that was weird.
That's what I didn't like about it. There was no getting away from it. So
now I think like the gallery scene's gotten bigger there. I think there's more culture. You know, they built Disney Hall. There, you know, there's more, I think there's a little more culture maybe going on, but I don't know. I was, you know, when basically I had my daughter, I was like, I don't want to live here anymore.
Yeah, I think it'd be a rough place to grow, like as a kid.
Just
I think
a you fast could, one. Like my friends that grew up there were like, oh yeah, we were trying Coke at 11. I was like, what? Yeah. What?
Yeah, that's
you were friends with Drew Barrymore?
Yeah, exactly.
You're friends with Lindsay Lohan, huh?
Yeah, besties.
So I was kind of the stereotypical New Yorker there, where because people are always like, people are like, oh, you're not going to like it because you're a New Yorker. And I was like, whatever. I don't, you know, New York's kind of annoying. And then I kind of liked it for about a year, maybe a year and a half. And then I got really tired of it. It's kind of, I think what it is like, it seems like whenever I'm there, it seems like no one wants me there. You know what I mean? Like, no one's like happy that you're there because you're kind of like, oh yeah, here I am. I'm doing like comedy. And no one's like, wow, really? That's so great. They're just like, yeah, great. Another fucking... and you can't really pretend you're just kind of like I kind of like act aloof a lot, and it's hard to like be there pursuing showbiz and act aloof about it. Like, yeah, I don't really care what happens. And they're like, well, why did you move to where they do TV and movies? And I was like, I don't know, because I don't really care about anything.
They're like, why are you living out of your car then? I don't feel exactly. I just feel like it.
And I don't feel like getting an apartment. But like, there's also a lot of that. You can just kind of like feel the broken dreams. Yeah, the desperation, right? Like, can't you just, yeah. I feel like I've said this to someone, like the last time I was there, like, I think there's like a dark energy there. Would you agree with that? Like, there's just something when I'm there, I pick up on like a darkness somehow. I don't know, maybe it's, but like, I thought I was crazy, but then I watched, there's a David Lynch movie called Mulholland Falls. Have you ever seen that? And yes. That movie is all kind of about like the dark energy of Los Angeles. Because mm-hmm. Have you seen it? Or
I think I saw part of it, like, but I don't remember it. I think Dines watched it and I watched it.
You should watch. It's very like Naomi Watts moves there as like a fresh faced, like young actress. And she's like really, she has a lot of like spunk and she's very like innocent. And then it just kind of shows how
her downfall.
Kind of, but also
the system sucks her in.
Kind of like how the kind, and not even like, oh, everyone's horrible, but like more that there's like an there's like an energy that's kind of like hovering over it that kind of is making.
I think that's true though. I have to say, yeah, I think it is. I think that you know, if it weren't for the great weather too, you'd notice it more. Mm. But it'll be like that dark energy's there, but it's, you know, 82 and sunny with no humidity.
Right. And it what's weird about it is that it seems like a really chill, laid back place because everyone's kind of like, it's kind of like a pot culture and everyone is kind of like beach. It's like a lot of people that go to the beach and stuff and it seems chill, but then it's not really. But I guess it depends.
It's a small town. It's like the 10th biggest city in the world. That's a small town.
Yeah. Like you'll run into the same people and stuff.
Well, I think it's kind of like New York. They don't call it boroughs, but there are definitely different boroughs that people exist in LA, you know?
Yeah. And didn't you lived in like West Hollywood or something?
I lived in West Hollywood. Yeah. It was fantastic when I lived there. I think it's gotten more she now. It was a little more real. You know, it was a lot of Armenian families, Russian families, the LGBTQ community, of course. And it was cool. It was like, you know, it's really diversified. I think now when I drive through there, because I always show Fliss the house she was, you know, lived in when she was born. And she, it's like people built McMansions to fill up the entire property lot. Like no one has a yard anymore. It's like a giant air conditioner. That's what the houses look like. And you're just like, oh my God, it's so crowded now. And there's just all this LA has awful architecture because it went through phases. So it looks kind of like, and it was never like zoned. So it's like, you'll have like a house that looks like it would be in Cuba next to one that looks like it should be in, you know, Nottingham Forest. Right. It's insane. It's not, you know, not a pretty city.
Yeah. So it's, so I don't know. Yeah. It's one of those things that, whenever I was out there and I'd meet people, like I would meet some people and they'd be like, yeah, I love it here. I love it. And that was always kind of a red flag. Like I was like, really? All right. I don't know if me and you were going to like hit it off.
You're like, no, you don't.
But how do you not like LA? Because you sound like you're from LA. That's
I don't always know. Talk it, about. This. That's what I mean. Like,
you
I
think
feel
Tom
like
sounds like he's from New York.
Because he's got that Tom drawl.
Yeah.
I think he does kind of sound like a California surfer. I think you have a point there.
But that's why I always, and I had this before I even went to LA. And I think I always had a thing growing up of like, oh, I'm going to, because people would be like, you sound like you're from California. You'd love it there. And then I got there and I, at first I did. I think LA is like a good young place. Like when you're there young and you're like, I'm going to like follow my dreams and I'm here. You know what I mean? You're kind of open.
Before you're jaded, before you hit that age of being jaded. Like,
right,
you should be in LA before you're jaded. Definitely.
Right. Cause it's like an adventure and like you're meeting a lot of other people in your 20s. And then I moved back there again when I was like 37 for like 5 months. And I just
you're
was
like, no.
Yeah. I was like, no, this isn't for me. And then it was funny because I had been doing comedy in New York for a while and like I didn't tell anyone I was just going to go to LA for a little bit. And somehow it got out in the comedy scene that I was moving to LA and everyone was like, hey man, you're going to LA. Congratulations. And I was like, well, I don't know. What does that mean? I'm not like nothing.
They all thought you got a pilot. Come on.
Yeah.
You got your own show. Move over, Ray Romano. It's Tom McCaffrey.
So, like, what happened was I didn't stay there long. And then I came back and it was a lot of like, oh, man, oh. I'm sorry, man. What happened? And I was like, what? I just like left for a little while. And I this was like 2011. And I still run into people and they're like, hey, man, when did you move back from LA? And I'm like,
10 years ago,
9 years ago.
I want to say, Tom, that I saw you do stand up a couple times and you're funny, man.
I
had so much fun watching you. And
yeah, you guys came to the Improv once, right? You and Dines.
I want to say, yeah, we went there and I don't remember the Improv. Yes. Once. And we went to another place once.
I think near you guys. I forgot what it was called. Like, Luna Park or something like that.
Oh yeah. Luna Park. Cause people did comedy at Luna Park. You know who used to do comedy at Luna Park was Zach Galifianakis, like before he was known.
Yeah, yeah. He was, when I was there, he was kind of like just about to, hit. He was sort of coming up at that time. This is another thing I was going to bring up. I was going to bring up earlier. So how much do you remember? You probably remember a lot of like us in like school together, right?
Sure. You don't remember it? Is it just, were you stoned Tom, like my wedding? Were you just stoned the whole time?
No, I really didn't even smoke weed in college. I think I smoked weed like 3 times, but what happened was right before I went in the first day, someone was smoking weed. I took a hit and I was high for 4 years.
We were in the same class.
Yes. And SMU has, you know, a very elite small theater program. So there are only 10 men and 6 women. So we all knew each other really well.
And do you remember we did some scenes together? Do you remember this? This is the part.
You and I. Oh my God. We did Streetcar Named Desire.
I know. Did you just remember that now?
I just did.
Yeah.
You played Stanley Kowalski? Yeah. Are you shitting me?
Yes.
Yeah, I played Stanley and Della, so you were Blanche.
Or... Della.
I was Blanche Dubois. You were Stanley, and you had like the full like white tank top on, that Stanley Kowalski look. Yeah.
Yeah. No, weird.
Oh my God.
What am I remembering that I remember you doing something where you were it was like, I think some sort of improv thing we did and you were teaching people how to dance and you had these dances, man. That you were like, it's the jacket.
Yeah. Yeah. So we did this, we did this like,
is there a video of this? I need.
No,
oh God. Not. It would be so good if there was.
Yeah. I could blackmail him.
Do it later.
He had named them all different things. And it was like, if you couldn't dance, it's okay. Cause you can do like the open your jacket.
Right. Oh, so I did like, it was supposed to be funny. It was like kind of comedic. It was comedic.
It was funny. It was hilarious. I'm remembering it 30 years later. Come on.
No, it's funny. Cause I remember doing it and like, I thought it was so dumb. And then afterwards people were like, that was amazing. And I was like, really? And I don't know if you were, I don't know if you were in my class, but do you remember you had James DePaul, right? As a TA?
No, I was in. You did. I was in Dales.
Okay.
Or were you in Dales?
Not sophomore year. Sophomore year. Yeah. So, so James DePaul was this professor and acting teacher. And like, I thought we all had him one semester. And then I think later we split up because it was like two camps. There was a lot of people that liked him. And then there was half of the class didn't like
that. I am not going to be taught by him. Yes.
Yeah. Like very stern. Like, no, I won't be in his class. And I like, he really liked me. He thought I was funny. And so, I mean, you know, that's kind of all you need with me is like, just to like kind of, I'm like Trump basically.
Yeah. Say nice things.
So, wow. Like, but so what happened was in our, you didn't have this happen. Like, so one day he was like, hey, everyone next week, I want the assignment is everyone has to do a stand-up act in class. Did you have him do that or not?
I didn't. I luckily got out of doing that. Yeah.
So
that was your class.
So sophomore year. And I was always like funny and I thought about doing stand-up. I mean, kind of. And so we all had to do stand-up. And that was the very first time I ever did stand-up was because of that class. And then, and I was pretty funny. And he was like, wow, you're like good at that. You should do that.
Well, that's so heartwarming, Tom. Like you're a comedy virgin, and he discovered it in you.
Well, it's funny because
you could look at it the other way. He probably caused you a lot of pain and heartache.
That's kind of what I think of it now a little bit.
You could have been just a regular normal person.
Yeah. Well, it probably would have happened at some point, yeah. But so I remember he messaged me like two and a half years ago, and I met with him for lunch, and I was like, you know, the way you were like, oh, it's kind of like a cool moment. I was like, oh, I was telling him about it because I had had some success at one point. I was like, you know, it was funny because like the first time I did stand up was like in your class. And I thought he'd be like really into it. And he was like, oh, yeah, yeah, that's cool. Like he wasn't as into it as I thought he would be. And
you thought it was going to be this groundbreaking like story that he'd go on to tell people for years about how he inspired his student.
Well, I remember being like, no, you don't understand. It was almost, I was like, no, you don't understand. Like, I'm like really funny. Like people think I'm really funny now. And like, like I did things and like good. What?
Because really, that's what really funny people tell everyone, you know, like, hey, I'm really funny.
Yeah. But I think I was like, you're not getting it. Like I actually ended up doing stand up and, it was one of those things like I was like, oh, one day I'll see him again and it'll be like this. And you know, you have those moments you're like, well, if I see them again, this is what it will be like. And then it's not like that at all. And you're like,
So he was your acting teacher?
Yes.
Yeah.
His name is James DePaul.
Yeah. He and I liked him
a lot. Who do you think's a better acting teacher? James DePaul or James DeFranco?
I hear James Franco is like a very hands-on instructor. Doesn't he harass everyone or something? Is that what's going on?
We were talking about that. Do you know that story about James Franco?
Yes. He's like, he's being shamed by women, right?
Yeah. And he does it as an acting teacher a lot, doesn't he? Is that the story?
He would like, yeah. I think he would, well, we were talking about this last week. It's like, why is James Franco teaching acting classes? And then it kind of seemed like, oh, well, it's because he's like these 17-year-old girls are taking a class and it's his way of meeting 17-year-old girls. But I think it's kind of
sleazy.
Like, but wouldn't you just, if you were like a movie star, would you really need to, like, I should be giving acting classes.
You should. Hey, you just came up with your new dating plan, Tom.
I know, exactly. Like, you guys just
revenge. No Tinder for you.
Yeah, exactly. There's a 17-year-old cutoff.
They have to be 18. I'm just going to warn you, Tom. They got to be 18.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I'll up.
You haven't learned anything from Chris D'Elia. You should learn that.
All right. Well, Lila, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate you. Yeah,
thank you for having me.
With the book, though, so it's out. Are you thinking?
You can get it at Amazon. You can Barnes and Noble, Target, Bookshop. If you like to support small booksellers, it's looks like this. For you two who can see it.
Oh, wow. There you go. The Situation.
The Situation, A Radical Journey Through Sisterhood. And proceeds go to an art foundation I helped found in her name that brings education about art to schools. We appreciate every book you purchase.
And your sister's name was Carolyn?
Carolyn Glasso. Yes.
That's great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope you had fun. It was, pretty.
Thank you for having me on it. I'm going to be in New York this summer looking at
Columbia
with Fliss. So we got to hook up and have a.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Watch him do comedy.
I know. Well, okay. I got to get the tour dates then. You got to.
Well, I'm
according to Tom, he's very funny. According to Tom.
I know. Well, we'll see. We'll see if that's true.
It's funny. Yeah. sometimes I have these like moments of saying I'm really funny to people. And like, I was saying that to, my girlfriend and, I was like, you know, I'm really funny, you know, like she does think I'm funny. And then I was like, you know, I'm really, really funny. And then, like about a week later, we were like playing some of my YouTube videos and her parents were there and she was like, oh yeah, show them this. And like, the videos like are very juvenile humor, you know, like
shocking.
What? Like just I know. So as I was watching it with them, I was like, yeah, maybe I'm not that funny. Like it was kind of a realization, like, well, maybe once you show it to other people, maybe it's not that funny. I feel like a lot of my humor is like you have to know me for like 5 months.
You know, Tom, you might want to look into a cruise ship. Like, someone can cruise with you for a week and then you do comedy.
I don't think you that's know? Long enough.
And they get, maybe they cruise around the world. You know, they get to know you for a few months, then you start performing.
Yeah. I don't think that that's how people who do the hiring do it, though. I don't think they're like, yeah, well, you know, we'll just kind of like, we'll travel around for a while so they can get to know you.
You guys can live together for a year.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Yeah, maybe I'll just have 500 people move in with me. But actually, living with me isn't that funny.
Well, thank you guys for having me. It's
yeah,
been a
thank
blast.
You so much.
Yeah, Lila, great Glasso, job.
Francis, okay. Thank you very much. Yeah, great job. And
buy the book.
Buy the book. And please rate and review this podcast and subscribe and donate on Patreon to us and give us money. And we'll see you next time. LE2B. Thank you.